This is the Pony Express.
And welcome to another edition of the Pony Express, the first and last here in September as we kick off the month on the CBS Sports Radio Network, Sirius XM Channel 206, digitally at the tip of your fingers with your smartphone, your cell phone device, the radio.com app. Download that for free and you can stream us. CBSSportsRadio.com, the CBS Sports app. Live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio, Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I'm Andrew Filippone. It's the Pony Express at 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is the name of the show, the Pony Express, except Pony is spelled P-O-N-I. And you can follow us on Twitter, at CBS Sports Radio. That was Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, one of their biggest insiders, giving you the terms and the details from one of the biggest trades that went down yesterday. Both big deals involved the Houston Texans. The one we're going to focus on to start today's show is the deal the Texans made with Miami to get left tackle Laremy Tunsil. Something they reached for in the draft when they took an offensive tackle from an FCS school, a player that had a second, some scouts had a third round grade, reach pick, need pick. Haven't been able to plug that hole, haven't been able to fill that need. They bring in Laremy Tunsil. Houston Texans fill maybe their biggest void, their biggest weakness, and that wasn't the only deal they made. Obviously, they sent Jadeveon Clowney to the Seahawks. I'm sure you know about that by now. And that's something else we'll get to later on in the show. While we were, while I was getting ready for the show, another trade went down. The Dolphins traded Kiko Alonso, inside linebacker, to the Saints. And so I want to talk about, I think, one of the NFL, one of professional sports' biggest questions right now, right off the top here. Something that I think is like an existential question that not only NFL teams, but pro sports franchises in the other major sports here in America are contemplating, considering, and we're seeing it more and more. It has become widespread. It has become rampant. It is a philosophy. It is a way of thinking that has become commonplace in professional sports today. And for a long time, it was less common in the NFL. We almost never would see teams do this. The Miami Dolphins are the latest example of a team, a pro sports team, that is built to fail. Their mission this season is to lose. And the players won't throw games. They're not going to lose games on purpose. The coaches aren't going to call in bad plays. They're not going to neglect their duties to build game plans for game day. But the whole point in Miami this year is to be as bad as possible. The objective there is to be the worst team in the NFL this year. And I think that new age philosophy on sports, where teams have found a loophole, they have figured it out, that it makes really no sense to be mediocre. There's no reward for being average. Has created, and we see this big time in baseball, where there is a clear dividing line, haves and have-nots. Teams that are trying to win, and teams that are putting off winning and are accepting losing because they think in the long run it will be good for them. The Dolphins have stripped it bare. They trade Kiko Alonso. They trade their franchise left tackle, Laremy Tunsil. They let, like, one of their all-time sack leaders, Cameron Wake, go this offseason. They got rid of a quarterback. They traded Ryan Tannehill, who, say what you will about him, but right now, he's better than Ryan Fitzpatrick and Josh Rosen. They got rid of Robert Quinn. They got rid of Danny Amendola. They got rid of Frank Gore. The idea is to be bad. It's to suck. Lose to win. Take a step backward to take two step forwards. That is the Dolphins' philosophy on this year. And the people who tried this in Cleveland, who took a baseball idea, the Houston Astros had six straight losing seasons, three consecutive 100-loss seasons. Their payroll was down to under $20 million. Without that period of futility, the Astros are not one of the best teams in baseball, a team that is trying to win a World Series in two out of three seasons. Without the Cubs having a 100-loss season in hard times, Theo Epstein doesn't build a team that ends a 108-year period, a drought, without a World Series win. We see it in basketball teams. The Knicks, they're incompetent, but, like, they tanked to try to get Zion. It didn't work. Happens in the NHL, happens in the NBA, happens in Major League Baseball. Now it's starting to happen in football. And the Browns have the blueprint. The Dolphins want to be Cleveland in 2 years. They want to have a franchise quarterback, a quarterback who they'll likely take with the number one pick in next year's draft, and they'll make the decision. Do they like Tua? Do they like Herbert? Which one of those quarterbacks do they like more? They've got a bunch of extra picks. They can move up and down in the draft. They've got 2 second-round picks. They've got an extra first from the Texans. They can move up and maybe target another guy they really like, whether it's a Tunsil replacement at left tackle. Maybe they want to get a wide receiver to go with Tua or Herbert. Who knows? Endless possibilities for them. 12 picks in the first three rounds of next year's draft, $100 million in cap space. The last 48 hours, I would think, have energized the Dolphins fan base. It's the first time, if I'm a Dolphins fan, there have been other times, like when Nick Saban got hired, or maybe Ryan Tannehill got drafted, I don't know, where Ndamukong Suh signs the biggest contract in NFL history for a defensive player. Maybe there were some spots there where Dolphins fans were reinvigorated or believed that the team was going to break out of this malaise or funk. But this, to me, is like owning it more than ever before and ending the endless cycle of Ryan Tannehill's and Jay Cutler and Matt Moore and Chad Henne and Chad Pennington and Cleo Lemon and Joey Harrington, Gus Frerotte, Jay Fiedler, A.J. Feely, Dante Culpepper, these just awful, brutal quarterbacks. The Dolphins have won one playoff game since Marino retired. That's 20 years ago. And so the idea is to be 0-16, 1-15, 2-14, have the fans show up to games with brown bags over their heads for another year, and then 2020, they have the draft capital, the cap space, and the opportunity to draft the quarterback that changes the franchise's direction, the same thing that Cleveland is doing right now. They've got Mayfield, they've got Garrett, they've got Beckham Jr. Only the Chiefs and the Patriots have better odds in the AFC. That's who Miami wants to be. They want to be the next Cleveland. This might be the best chance an AFC East team has had of unseating the Patriots in years. Because the Dolphins have the chance to get the great young franchise quarterback at a time when Tom Brady's going to be, what, by the time the Dolphins make that pick, 43 years old. And so this brings up all kinds of questions, whether or not fans think that this is bogus. And as a sports fan, how does it sit with you that teams across sports and now in the NFL, the Browns a couple of years ago, 0-16, 1-15, the Dolphins now, where teams are deliberately, purposefully losing, blowing teams up, putting a horrible product on the field short term because they believe it's beneficial long term. The tanking strategy, I think we've seen it work in other sports. We haven't seen it work in the NFL yet. The Browns will be the litmus test for that. And if it works for them, then I think Dolphins fans will feel even better about the moves that their team made in the last 2 days. And my theory on what happened this weekend is this. If the Browns are really good this year, and this works for Miami, one of the little kind of sidebar things that will come out of the next CBA will be the, and it might not even need that. It might not even need to be collectively bargained. I think the competition committee or Roger Goodell could just wave his magic wand and change it. My guess is very soon the NFL will change the way they order their draft. And there will be some kind of draft lottery. It might even be a draft lottery, and this is how you stop teams from tanking. If you do a draft lottery where every team that makes the playoffs has an identical percentage of getting the first pick, there's no incentive to lose. So say this past season, if the Steelers, who missed the playoffs at 9-6-1, and the Arizona Cardinals had the same exact odds to get the first pick, suddenly I think tanking goes away. Do that in any sport. In the NBA this past year, if the first team out in the Western Conference last year had the same odds of getting the first pick as the Knicks and the Cavaliers and whatever, now there's more incentive to be competitive every year. So that's what I think has to happen. And it's a loophole for now. It's one I think is going to change. I give Miami credit for exploiting it, but I know that it doesn't sit well with every fan. And there are some fans who believe, maybe we'll talk to some this morning, who think that when teams lose on purpose, that, you know, karma will come around to bite them. Also believe that they're sending the wrong message to not only their fans, but fans at large. When teams deliberately try to build a team that's built to finish at the bottom of the league to get a draft pick, that's what the Dolphins are doing. I think it's sound strategy, but if you play to win the game, if it's a result-oriented business, if it's all about winning the next game, how do you reconcile that with what teams like Miami are doing right now and what the Browns did 3 years ago? I want to get your thoughts on tanking to start, because now we very clearly, obviously, have a team in the NFL that's doing that again, and it might make their fans feel like they have a bright future. It might rub you the wrong way. Let's find out. 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. Do you have a problem with the Dolphins tanking? Deliberately building a team that might win one or two games this year because they think in the best interest of the franchise, it pays to lose games. Does it bother you when professional sports teams do this? Baseball, football, NFL, NBA, NHL, 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. Later this hour, the most impressive, the least impressive teams, moments, games from the first full weekend of college football. I'm Andrew Filippone. It's the Pony Express on CBS Sports Radio.
This is the Pony Express.
The toll-free number is 855-212-4227. It's brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. We've started this morning's show by talking about the moves the Miami Dolphins have made to give their fans hope that this endless cycle of mediocrity and futility is going to quickly become a thing of the past, that they're going to ask their fans to probably endure at least one more awful season. Get rid of all their good players, endure one more awful season. Go like 1-15, maybe winless. Get the first pick, draft the franchise quarterback, use all of the draft capital they have, a dozen picks in the first three rounds of next year's draft, to move up and down the draft board, build and cultivate a young nucleus of players, $100 million in cap space. Add that up, and instead of putting Band-Aids, you know, big free agent signings and quarterback trades and keeping your fingers crossed that a quarterback you take with like the 15th pick ends up being the franchise messiah, you know, rolling the dice with Josh Rosen, which clearly it looks like the Dolphins are already pretty confident that that's not going to be their answer. That was a low risk, high reward move. Looks like it's going to be more low risk than anything else. They owe Josh Rosen $6 million over the next 3 years. That's a bargain for a backup quarterback. They've built the team to lose. I think that is one of the major issues that is plaguing professional sports right now, is that teams have figured it out, many of them now, because of the way we set up our drafts. It's not like European soccer. This isn't the Premier League, where when teams finish at the bottom of the league, they get relegated. There are too many benefits to losing. And NFL GMs and NFL organizations have gotten smart. They've looked at their teams and they've been on, and they're starting to get more and more honest with themselves. Would they rather be 6-10, 7-9, or 2-14? Pays to be 2-14. And I think there are even fans, like Miami Dolphins fans, will root. My guess is most Dolphins fans will root for their team to lose every game this year. And when that like way of thinking takes over and becomes ubiquitous in professional sports, then I think it's a commissioner's duty to change that. Like, that would be one thing if I'm Roger Goodell. All right, it happened once with the Browns. Now it's happening again with the Dolphins. If it works for Cleveland, there's going to be more copycats. So how do you prevent teams from throwing in the towel before the season even starts? How do you convince teams to actually try to win? 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. What do you think of tanking? I think it's smart, but I also think it's one of professional sports' biggest problems. And now we've seen it bleed into the NFL. 855-212-4CBS. Here's Ed in Cleveland. He's on CBS Sports Radio. Hi, Ed.
Hi, how are you, Andrew?
Hey, man.
Just want to emphasize this call by, first of all, I am a Clevelander, but I'm a huge Steelers fan, and I listen to you on your show during the week, and I like you guys. But anyways, I just want to start this by, Miami's got a brand new head coach this year. Is he going into this with that? Did they give him the idea that, you know, they're going to be tanking, and how's his contract going to look? Are they going to fire him after 2 years? Did they tell the season ticket holders, hey, we're going to tank or not? Or did they just start this at the beginning of the year? You know what I'm saying? Before the people threw all their money out, and then you just popped this on them that we're going to be tanking. A lot of things happened here in Cleveland with Sasse Brown and Hugh Jackson, where Sasse Brown actually made a bunch of huge, huge acquisitions for draft capital and money-costed things like the Hayden move, getting rid of Joe Hayden, saving money there, and just other things. I just, my questions are things like that. Are they going to just let this new Miami coach go on? And I'll just sit back and listen to you.
I mean, I don't know. I can't predict that part of the future. I can't predict that part of the future. There have been managers in baseball. There have been coaches in football. You named one in Hugh Jackson. Coaches in basketball, coaches in hockey, who were hired primarily to just be the face of losing. And once the team, like take the Cubs, for example. All right, Dale Swaim, Rick Renteria will We'll ask these managers, we won't pay them a lot of money, we'll ask them to preside over rebuilding teams that have no chance of winning. And as soon as we think our young players are close enough to win something and compete, we're going to dump them. We're going to dump Rick Renneria after 1 year and get Joe Maddon. So I don't think there's any guarantee that Brian Flores 2 years from now is the head coach when, if the best laid plans are executed, the Dolphins are ready to win. I don't think they'd tell him that up front. I don't think that Dolphins ownership or Dolphins management would say to Brian Flores, hey, just to let you know, we're hiring you to just deal with the losing. We want your first NFL job is going to be one where we actually would prefer if you lost games. I don't really think they owe that to him. I think if you're a coach, you got to go into situations with eyes wide open. And we've seen coaches. Here's a college example, like Venables, Brent Venables, the Clemson defensive coordinator. My guess is he's probably turned down between 10 and 20 head coaching jobs. He's waiting for the right one. Josh McDaniels, behind Bill Belichick, I think is doing the same thing. He made a mistake once. He took a job in Denver. It blew up in his face. Next time he gets offered a head coaching job, he wants it to be right place, right time. Here's Adam in Maryland. He's on CBS Sports Radio. Hi, Adam.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Sure. I feel like living in Baltimore, I have a perspective on this with the performance of my Orioles for the last few years. I was 5 years old last time they won a World Series. We went 14 years without football, so the Orioles were always my first love. And the one hope I've had in my lifetime is to be able to celebrate another World Series championship. We obviously came very close in 14, but then you saw what happened last year when we still had all the stars on the team. It was an absolute dumpster fire.
Yep.
So now that we have Mike Elias, Sigmundsson, I'm hoping that they can do what they did in Houston here. So I'm very hopeful. So I realize it might change at some point, and they say, okay, you know, we're going to make a new plan here for teams that tank. I would just like to see something good come to fruition while we still have
it's an effective strategy because we've seen it work. You just referenced the team in baseball that won a World Series using that strategy. But it demands or commands patience out of fans when you can't even in baseball. Like, there is no hope springs eternal. There is no... like, if X, Y, and Z break right, no, you're going to lose 90 to 110 games. That's actually the plan. That's actually the wink-wink plan. That's the behind-closed-doors model. But I think it's incumbent on sports leagues to change that. You can't have, like in Major League Baseball, you can't have a situation where... I don't know. A quarter to a third of the league went into this season not trying to win. You can't have a situation where, you know, in the NFL right now, we've only got one team that's really doing this, the Dolphins. But I'll tell you what, if it works, we're going to see a season maybe a year or two from now where two or three teams try to do this. And then maybe 5 years from now, five or six teams are doing this, where they're punting on a year before it even starts. So I want to get your thoughts here at 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. You can follow me on Twitter at the Pony Express. Pony spelled P-O-N-I. Express spelled conventionally. You can follow us on Twitter at CBS Sports Radio. First full weekend of college football is in the books. And we'll go over the most impressive and the least impressive things from that opening weekend. Coming up next, it's the Pony Express on CBS Sports Radio.
This is the Pony Express.
The Michigan Radio Network, Learfield IMG Sports. Hey, this summer's hottest hoops league is coming to an end today at 2 Eastern, 11 Pacific. Join CBS Sports Network as they break down the teams competing for this year's Big 3 title, all leading up to the championship game at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on CBS. I'm going to give you some takeaways from college football, from week one of college football. And if you want to join the conversation, you can at 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. And I'm going to start with not just Michigan, but the top of the Big Ten. Now, I'm going to give you a reveal or a kind of inside look at my life yesterday. I basically plotted my day around college football. So I got all my errands and stuff done outside the house, inside the house, before noon Eastern. Had an event to go to, but I knew there were going to be TVs there at like 5 Eastern, and then left that event to go home and watch more college football till around midnight Eastern. So it was a pretty much a 12-hour with a couple of maybe little spots there, here and there, where I couldn't watch closely. But for the purpose of this show, I knew that the two biggest things I needed to focus on yesterday were the NFL transaction wire and the college football games. And so I'm talking to you today as somebody that had multiple TVs going at once with multiple games on multiple different devices. And so I think I've got a pretty good handle on most of the important games from yesterday. I wasn't in the dark. I didn't have to go to a soccer tournament for a 7-year-old yesterday, or, you know, a birthday celebration, or I wasn't, because it's Labor Day weekend, out in the boonies or at a camp somewhere, unable to watch the game. So I think I've got a pretty good sense of where college football is at after week one. And one of the big stories for me coming out of this weekend is that based on the evidence we have right now, which is not much, but based on just what every team put on tape the first week of the season, I don't think the Big Ten has a playoff team, which would make 3 years in a row without one. I don't think the Big Ten has a playoff team. And this is coming from somebody who last week on the show picked Michigan to finally break through, have an undefeated season, and get into the playoff. I got a feeling again that they're going to let me down and they're going to let their fans down, who are still waiting for Jim Harbaugh to take the next step from, okay, 10-2, 9-3 seasons are good, but when are we going to have the year where we actually beat Ohio State, win the Big Ten championship, and play for the national championship? We're into, the fifth year, and Michigan fans still don't have that. And I did not think really any top 25 or powerhouse Big Ten program made a good impression yesterday. Ohio State, please. They went up 28-0, you know, like that. 5 minutes into the game, you blink, you go to the bathroom, you make yourself a sandwich, you come back, they're up 4 touchdowns. From there, the final 3 quarters of the game, they were outscored by Florida Atlantic 21-17. 21-17 over the final 3 quarters. If a college football game is match play, which it's not, but if it's boxing, which it's not, but if you go round by round, quarter by quarter, Florida Atlantic was better than Ohio State in 3 out of the 4 quarters. It just so happened the 1 quarter where Ohio State won, they didn't just win, they embarrassed Florida Atlantic for 15 minutes. But short of that, I saw 6 consecutive possessions where Ohio State either made a mistake where they coughed the ball up and turned it over, or punted. And so I just don't think they're the same team without Urban Meyer. Is Fields cut from the same cloth as Haskins and Braxton Miller and JT Barrett? For 5 minutes, I would have said yes. For the rest of the game, I say no. Florida Atlantic, long drives in the fourth quarter, so I didn't think if you watched Ohio State get up 28-0 and said, this game's over, and turned the channel, you might have a different impression or opinion of them. I didn't. I stayed with it. I don't think Ryan Day is looking at Lane Kiffin on the other sideline and saying, you know what, let's show mercy on poor old Lane Kiffin. You know, he's a, you know, salt of the earth guy, great person. Let's not run up the score on Florida Atlantic. Hey, college football style points are important. Eye test is important. And if the college football playoff committee watched that game yesterday, I don't think they walked away from it thinking that Ohio State was like a top five team. So that's one. Michigan, same thing. Three fumbles. Start of the game, they give the ball right back to Middle Tennessee. At the half, I'm sweating that game out. At the half, it's a two-score game, and Middle Tennessee State's getting the ball back. It's not like Middle Tennessee State. It might be the best team in Tennessee, as it turns out. More on that later. But they're like a mediocre, average, middle-of-the-pack Conference USA team. Their quarterback just left. Graduated. Now, I look at what the Big Ten did compared to what the top of the SEC did yesterday. And I think it clearly showed that, you know, Michigan, Ohio State are a tier below that. Nebraska, what an overrated team that is. My goodness. You know, Scott Frost won a quote-unquote national championship at UCF, and it's the prodigal son. It's, you know, everybody's favorite Cornhusker coming back home to lead that program back from the ashes to get him back to, you know, the Tom Osborne days. How do you let South Alabama, 3-9 last year, pick to finish last in the Sun Belt? How is that a one-touchdown, one-score game going into the fourth quarter? I'll tell you how it's the case. Nebraska went 4-8 last year. The idea that the people who picked the top 25 felt like Nebraska was one of the best 25 teams in the country because they scored a lot of points in their last six games with Martinez at quarterback. And, you know, of their four wins late in the year, three of them were at home against Illinois, Minnesota, and Bethune-Cookman. And now they're the pick to win the Big Ten West? Stop. Kirk Ferentz, Iowa's always good. And I think Wisconsin, maybe last year was an aberration that they're getting it right back to being who they usually are, which is a top 15 team. So Nebraska's vastly overrated. If they win the Big Ten West, then all it will do is prove that that's, you know, an awful division and one that really isn't worthy of putting a team into the Big Ten championship game. So that was one of my takeaways. I think the top of the Big Ten proved to me that it's really not going to produce a team that is worthy of playing in the college football playoff. And that even goes to Michigan State on Friday against Tulsa. I didn't think they were very good either. Andrew Filippone, CBS Sports Radio. Let me give you something else. And this goes back and ties into another point I made on last week's show, which you can get at cbssportsradio.com. We archive, we podcast. I've got to make a quasi-apology to the Pac-12. I know it's going to be easy because of the way Oregon bungled that game and blew it last night to pile on the Pac-12 and like USC almost, you know, room serviced that game to Fresno State last night. If you missed it, like, Clay Helton did everything in his power to lose that game, and Fresno State threw an interception in the end zone to seal the victory for USC. It's going to be easy, low-hanging fruit to rip the Pac-12. I owe the conference as a whole an apology, though, for this reason. It's not, the whole conference isn't awful. Again, one of the themes in college football is that with bigger conferences that are split into divisions, it's misleading. The SEC West is great. The SEC East is pathetic. The ACC Atlantic has Clemson. The ACC Coastal has no ranked teams. The Big Ten East, in theory, has Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State. The Big Ten West, it's anybody's to win. The Pac-12 South has USC, UCLA, Arizona, Arizona State. The Pac-12 North has Washington, Washington State, Stanford, and Oregon. Four ranked teams. And I think Oregon should still be ranked because they were in control of that game really the entire way against Auburn. Chris Peterson always plays cupcakes in September. He'll have Washington as a double-digit win team. Mike Leach is one of the best coaches in the country. You could say the same thing about David Shaw. So actually, half of that division is good. Half of that conference is good. The four ranked teams in the Pac-12 North, that is the most teams that are ranked in a division aside from the SEC West, which we all believe is the creme de la creme, the cream of the crop in college football. And one more quick takeaway from this first full weekend of college football. Maybe Texas is for real. You know, Louisiana Tech is not exactly the barometer, but they were like, I think, a 20-point favorite, and that game was never in doubt. It's the first time that they have, under Tom Herman, won their opening game. And so it sets up, I think, an opportunity for them this week against LSU, where Texas, they have lost at least four games for nine straight years. Texas has a chance. Ellinger was great last night, four touchdowns. They've got a chance here where if they split against LSU and Oklahoma in the regular season, they might go into that Big 12 championship game with a chance to make it to the national to the college football playoff. All right, coming up next, Carly Lloyd. Don't go away. Pony Express, CBS Sports Radio.